Roger, roger. And, you should be able to see the buildings and stuff like that just as the bullet makes the bend in the river there. Looks like.
We're picking up some ground fire down there, it looks like. I'm going to have to change my running heading. I'll still turn left here and keep clear of you.
The fact that the U.S. was pulling out was not lost on the men coming in country to replace those who had finished their 365-day tour of duty or who left as casualties.
Well, when I first got over in Vietnam, I went with the 1st Cav, 5th of the 7th, down south around Song Bay. I was in October, November of 70 in there. And the 5th of the 7th stood down and went home. And it was on the end of December, middle of January. I was that's when I had too much time left in country to go home with them, so they just sent us up. But at that time, we were just fillers, whoever needed it. When I first got there in country, the 1st Cav needed replacements. When the 1st Cav went home, the 5th or 7th part of the 1st Cav went home, then I went up north with the 101st.
The war in Vietnam would be fought differently. There would be no more search and destroy missions. No more would America flex its military muscle. It was now a war fought by Vietnamese against Vietnamese. The U.S. military was supposed to be playing a supporting role.
First, the 501st is main place was at Phu Bai. That's where the battalion was, right there. And we'd work out of small little fire bases out in different areas were around in Vietnam. We worked up around the DMZ, worked in the Asia, a lot in different areas.
Just because the Americans were in a supporting role did not mean they were out of the fight. There were still bases to defend and patrols to perform.
Recon, we were in a small units. I think there was six men. It depended if the lieutenant went out with you or not. But usually it was just six-man teams. Yeah, you had different missions, what you were supposed to go out, get information. Just like when we went over in Laos, we went way out ahead of them, and they dropped us off. We went out of Vandegrift, fire base Vandegrift up there. We went ahead, and then our mission was to work our way back and get as much information and try not to get into contact, but if you did, you did. You know, I mean, like I say, you're a six-man team. You're not out there trying to, hello, here I am. You know, no, nothing like that.
If you weren't patrolling or maintaining equipment, for most of the Americans left in Vietnam, it was a matter of waiting.
Because unlike the outfits that were in the field all the time, we were in base camp. So you pulled a tour on the bunker line, but then, you know, throughout the day, you know, people did stuff, and then, you know, like I had additional duties like motor officer, stuff like that.
Waiting is what soldiers around the world are trained to do until they are called upon for what Teddy Roosevelt called the crowded hour.
And then what would happen is that you get the signal that something had happened, they needed you. And I can't remember what the signal was, but everybody had to run, grab all their stuff, hop on a helicopter, and out you went.
Like the cavalry in the Old West, the young sky troopers would saddle up and ride to the sound of the guns. The missions would vary, but for the Blues, they were always dangerous.
The type of things we did was, like I told you, if a helicopter was shot down, usually what happens is the loaches and the cobras would fly around. Guys were pretty much crazy. I mean, those loaches would low level down there, you know, and just irritate people, just like poking a stick in, you know, in a tree until they got shot at. And of course, that was kind of a natural selection process, because if the Vietnamese didn't know at that point that when you shot at the loach there was a cobra going to roll in on you, then they weren't going to live very long, which is what happened to them, because then the cobras would roll in. And then if there was something that was left over, like a rucksack or whatever, you know, we'd go underground, recover it. If the helicopter got shot down, which could happen, we would go in and secure the area where the helicopter was until they could lift it out. If another helicopter was, you know, from some other unit was shot down, we would go secure that.
No matter where you were, at the fire bases or in the boonies, life in Vietnam was tense, and no one wanted to be the last man to die in a war your country had already decided was as good as over.
It was always tense, okay? Vietnam was always tense. You were always on guard. And it seemed like the worst times would be when there was no contact, when you might not see anybody or anything, and you're just moving around. It would be like it was, those were kind of like the worst times because everything's building up. You're waiting. You're anticipating that contact from 1 minute to the next. You know, you're on your guard. You're on your guard all the time. And all of a sudden, bam, there it went. It was in contact. Something was going on. And then shuts off. We're either moving out or they have. Whatever, you know, it just always clicking on, off. It was hard, but it got to be like a rush.
Lam Son 719 was to be the first major test of America's plan to turn the war over to the Arvin forces. It became the last major killing ground for the young grunts and chopper pilots in Vietnam. In 1971, Richard Nixon wanted to make a major move against communist strongholds in Laos. The plan was codenamed Lam Son 719, in honor of the birthplace of Le Loi, a Vietnamese nationalist who repelled the Chinese invaders in 1428. The objective was to disrupt an ongoing North Vietnamese army supply buildup at Thi Hiphon, Laos.
I went in 101st, I went in recon. First of the 501st, that's who I was with, recon.
The battle plan for Lam Son 719 involved an attack by the Airborne Division and the 1st Armored Brigade along Highway 9 to Aloe, and then on to Thi Hiphon, where Highway 9 intersected the Ho Chi Minh Trail. 22 miles inside Laos, Thi Hiphon was a major enemy communications and supply hub. The highway was to be kept open as the main supply route. The 1st Infantry Division was to attack on a parallel axis to the main attack along the high ground south of the Zipon River and protect the southern flank of the Airborne Division. The Ranger Group would establish fire bases north of the highway and protect the right flank. A Marine Brigade would remain in reserve near Khe Sanh. Lam Son 719 was to be the first major test of Vietnamization. It got underway on February 8, 1971, but the American was present in force.
It was supposedly all Arvin, the Vietnamese army, was going to do it, but the 101st was with them. A few other divisions, I'm not quite sure exactly. Like I said, I didn't know much more than what we had to do at the time.
The operation began as planned, with the 1st Armored Brigade Task Force advancing 9 kilometers along Highway 9 on the first day, and with 3 battalions of the 1st Infantry Division air assaulting south of the highway and 2 battalions of the Airborne Division assaulting to the north. By February 25th, enemy infantry, supported by tanks, overran Firebase 31, capturing 120 South Vietnamese. With 3 enemy divisions pressuring them, the Rangers began to withdraw from their fire bases. Unable to continue the advance along Highway 9, General Lam decided to use his air mobile assets to launch an air assault on Thi Hiphon. And on March 6th, 120 Hueys lifted 2 Arvin infantry battalions into the town, capturing it against light enemy resistance. The enemy reacted aggressively, rushing reinforcements to the area. The U.S. Army Cobras tried to halt the enemy armor and had some success sweeping the accompanying infantry from the tanks using 2.75-inch Flechette rockets. In order to score a direct hit, The rockets had to be fired from a distance of 500 to 1,000 meters, which brought the Cobras into the range of the tank's machine guns and the enemy infantry in the area. The dedicated tank-busting helicopter was sorely needed. The U.S. helicopter crewmen went against the heaviest anti-aircraft barrage incurred in the war. Soon enemy pressure bogged down the Arvin advance, and poor weather and heavy air defense opposition began to limit the air support available to relieve the pressure. The offensive was halted before reaching their first objective. The stalled troops were pounded again and again by the NVA and Kong forces. Soon they began to withdraw. That Arvin retreat became a rout, and the rout became panic. U.S. commanders tried to save the day by calling in the cavalry, and A Troop got its orders.
They flew us out there, and we were setting up on the caisson plains out there where the old base had been. I can't remember really seeing many maps or anything. I can remember getting sent out there. They dropped us off kind of by ourselves, just a gaggle of us, and got on the radio trying to figure out where I was supposed to go. Contact somebody, and they say, we're over here to the west or something like that. So, you know, we just started off in that direction.
But for Lieutenant Wagner, the day was cut short.
The next thing I know, there's an explosion, and one of my guys is laying on the ground. And we're not quite sure exactly at that point really what had happened. So Doc, our medic, he starts to go to the guy, and all of a sudden there's an explosion. He's down. At that point, you know, we're in a minefield. So I told everybody to stay where they were. I had the morphine in my pocket because that's kind of what you did it then. And so I took my bayonet out, and I started to probe to work my way over to Doc and to DeMarco was the name of the first guy I was hurt. And I don't remember getting very far. And I don't know if I was on a pressure release or what, but the next thing I knew, I was on the ground too. And, you know, I looked, I could see my foot was all blown apart. And I felt a real sticky feeling between my legs. I'd gotten wounded there too. And at first you just don't know anything, you know, what's going on. You're just kind of stunned. And then eventually you start getting kind of shocky, you know, and start shivering and stuff. And then a medevac helicopter came. And these guys came down on a sling. And I can remember telling them, don't stand down here. Don't step down here. Don't step down here. And this guy, I don't know if he could see from up there or what, or he was just the bravest guy I've ever seen. He, you know, put a sling around me. And up I went.
Once on board the medevac, Wagner had one concern.
I was on helicopter, and I kept asking, well, frankly, have my balls been blown off? Because that's what I was worried about, because I knew they made plastic feet. And I was only about 23, and I had just other things I intended to do with my life. And I don't remember. I remember getting back, and then there was a succession of back hospitals I went to. I was stabilized. I'm sure I was at Quang Tri for a little while. And I went someplace else. And then I ended up in Japan, where they kept people, I think, to stabilize them until I flew them back. The doctor would come to me, change dressing, say, we're going to number 10 foot. We'll have to cut it off when you get back to the United States. And flew back on a C-141, I think, all loaded with litters.
With overall enemy pressure increasing and the weather worsening, the problem now was how to withdraw while still in contact with the enemy. It proved impossible to keep the highway open and secure, so many of the Arvin units were withdrawn by helicopter and often under fire. Panic occasionally set in, and some helicopter crews resorted to greasing the skids of their Hueys to prevent Arvin troops clinging to them during the evacuation process. The last elements of the 1st Infantry Division were extracted on March 21st, and the rest of the invasion force a few days later. Although thousands of tons of ammunition, supplies, and POL had been destroyed by the Arban units and U.S. TAC Air and B-52 strikes. The invading force had been driven out by the North Vietnamese with heavy losses. The South Vietnamese government claimed that just under 14,000 enemy had been killed, against 6,000 Arban killed and wounded. American figures estimated Arban losses at around 50%. United States aircrew losses were 176 killed, 1,942 wounded, and 42 missing. Helicopter losses were put at 107 destroyed and 600 damaged. Lam Son proved that the Arban troops were no match for the communists. Lam Son 719 was the last major engagement of the U.S. troops in Vietnam, but it was not the end of their war. For two more years, the men of the U.S. Armed Forces went out on patrols, defended fire bases, and died.
I worked all the way into August 5th with recon, and then I stepped on a landmine in an area that was... There was supposedly a battalion of NVA soldiers in there we were in, getting information, and we had to hook up as a platoon to be pulling us out. And I stepped on a landmine. And that was basically pretty much the end of Vietnam for me.
Finally, on March 29, 1973, the last American ground combat forces left Vietnam. The last trooper to leave was a Screaming Eagle of the 101st Airborne.
I think that I'll leave you on this one story, but the hardest thing, the singularly most difficult thing that I ever had to do in my entire military career was to write a letter. That, to me, there was no preparation, you know, no school. Oh, there was a regulation. You know, we had to get the letter out, and it had to start to go through channels right away, and we only had 48 hours to do it. But I'm telling you, and the worst part about writing a letter was when you really had intimate knowledge of this young soldier. Some of these kids that I trained with at Fort Campbell, you got to know them. You got to know them. You got to know their families through them. You didn't want to, but you did. I mean, you were pretty close. You were pretty tight. And that, to me, was the most difficult thing. Even today, when I think back on it, I just never wanted to do that again. It was the hardest thing I ever had to do.
There's a high-flying bird way up in the sky, and I wonder, does he look down as he flies on by, riding on the air so easy in the sky. But Lord, look at me, like a tree, yeah. I got to sit down, can't cry. Oh Lord, I'm gonna die blue.